Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
This interview is in acknowledgement of the Transgender Day of Remembrance that takes place each year on the 20th of November. And it's in memory of all those affected by transgender phobia and violence. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen. And today we are talking with a good friend of mine, a person who I have a huge amount of respect for, Mitch Creedy. Mitch, you've been on the podcast before. It is great to welcome you back onto A Different Way of Seeing.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always lovely to be on your podcast because I also have a deep respect for you. So thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for being here. So as we did last time, I'm going to ask the same first question, which I ask all my podcast guests, and we will take it from there. But can you just give us a brief introduction to yourself and a little of your story?
All right. So my name is Mitch, as you know, and my pronouns are they/he. However we want to refer to me is great. I am totally blind. And yeah, I'm really just honored to be here. I was actually born in South Africa, but now I live in Canada. And so I identify as non-binary, but I'm in the process. And so the they, he thing is just a new pronoun. I was going by they, them, but I am sort of playing around a little bit because I get to do that because it's my life. And so I am on Vancouver Island in Canada. And yeah, it's basically I've been here for, since 94. So I was about 16 when I came. So I've got a little bit of a smattering of both countries in my way of being in the world.
Which is always an interesting concept because it creates a certain intersectionality. But more importantly for us today, I think I would like to explore a little bit more about the concept of gender and inclusion, and just to get a better understanding, because a lot of people really struggle with the concepts around the LGBTQIA+ community, the terms, the pronouns. And I'm really grateful that you are willing to chat openly and honestly about your lived experience, your identities, and the process, the journey of discovering and exploring your identities. So thank you for being willing to do that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I think it's wonderful to have platforms where we can learn and we can grow. And I think that's the beauty of a podcast like this, is you can listen to it and I always learn something.
Which is good. I mean, time is such a valuable thing that we should be not using our time on things always. I mean, sometimes it's good to have frivolous and just things that we do just purely for enjoyment, but it is good sometimes to have the opportunity to learn and grow and to think a little bit differently about situations.
Exactly. So, and the other thing, it's not necessarily like it's something you're listening to. It's a very passive way to learn, which is nice, especially for something like this, because then you end up being able to have a chance to let the information sink in or explore different facets that you want to. And so it's quite beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy learning from each of the guests that I have on my show. So it's great to have this opportunity to chat to you today. I want to ask if you'd be willing to chat a little bit about your journey and just the discovery, the recognition of the fact that you weren't comfortable identifying with the birth gender that you were ascribed. Are you happy to chat about that?
I am absolutely happy to chat about that. I'm very open about my journey now. It hasn't always been that way, but I'm choosing to see it as a really, it's kind of like, you know, how you think about the metamorphosis of a butterfly, right? So you've got the little, I don't know, I'm probably going to get the whole progression wrong here, but the cocoon, and then you've got the little caterpillar, and it eventually becomes a butterfly. So I don't know, but it works for me. So I think for me, when I was younger, I didn't ever feel like I was assigned female at birth, but I never felt a huge connection to that particular gender. And not that there's anything, it was just my personal experience, okay? And everybody will have their own personal journeys and experiences, so I just want to honor that. I kind of just didn't feel connected. When I was about, I would say, you know, before I hit puberty, I just used to run around and think of myself as a little boy. It was kind of funny. And then once puberty hit, then I sort of realized, oh, wait a minute. I'm really in for the long haul here. So, you know, I was a child, and those kinds of conversations weren't happening at that point in time. So even if I had expressed to some people, which I had, they kind of didn't know what to do. It was just more of a silly thing that I said, right? And something to perhaps it was funny. So fast forward, you know, we came to Canada. And as we came to Canada, I started becoming exposed to lots of different ideas that I haven't been exposed to before. And so I guess that may have started like in university. And it's just by virtue of coming to another country, exposing yourself to a different culture and so on. But then about, I would say, six and a half years ago, I actually moved to Vancouver Island by myself because I got a job. And when I did that, I was a lot more free to just explore all kinds of facets. And I started hearing about people that felt like I did. And, you know, I used to work for the school district, and lo and behold, we had this speaker that came out one day and started talking. They are a storyteller. Ivan Coyote is their name. And when I listened to this individual speaking, you suddenly went, oh my goodness, that's me, minus the blindness, because this individual is sighted. So I sat there and I just cried. And of course, all the students are like, oh my gosh, you know, are you okay? Because a lot of them had come to the talk. And then I started volunteering through my job. I started volunteering at there was a club at the school I think it was called like a rainbow club or something to that effect. And it was for students who were perhaps gay or perhaps allies or, you know, LGBTQ plus, or I should say 2S LGBTQ plus and AI as well. Like, so there was lots of presentations of the human experience. I ended up finding there was a doctor locally who came to do a presentation at the school. And she finished her presentation, and I stayed behind, and I stayed behind till all the young people had left. And I said, are you taking any new patients? Because she was a gender affirming doctor, which means she could talk to you about gender and gender dysphoria and all those things. So she said, yeah, just phone me. So I made an appointment, and I was like so late for my next like class at work that I was supposed to be in, but oh well. I was just like, oh, I had to go to the washroom. And it's like, well, you just had a whole lunch to do that. But and that's where the journey started. And you know, she finally realized through a few interviews and me talking about some different experiences that I'd had that I was sort of struggling with gender dysphoria. And so in 2022, I had a double mastectomy, and best thing I ever did for myself. I did start on like hormones earlier this year, just to develop some more male characteristics. And it's just been, oh, I don't know, maybe this is like way too long of a story, but it's just been the best thing that's ever happened to me. Best thing that's ever happened to me.
Was there any particular event, any particular moment that prompted you to make the change more recently towards shifting from your dead name to the name you choose now, and your pronouns and that sort of thing? Was there any single event, or was it part of the process?
It was kind of part of the process. And I mean, really, I have to credit the youth that I've worked with in helping me, because they helped me to realize that I could be fluid. I could be someone one day and a different person the next day. So I kind of played a little bit. And I really played with the margins of gender, and I played with expressions, and I'd ask sighted people around me, okay, well, you know, what does this look like or that look like? And it's for me, when I got the chest surgery, that was very affirming. And I just remember after that, at some point, you know, after the pain and all that's gone away and you start to sort of live life again, you start to think, feel so much more comfortable in your body. And it's kind of like a train. Sometimes you know how when you start a train, sometimes it just goes and goes and goes, and it doesn't necessarily, it's kind of hard to stop it. And so it was kind of like, I wonder what else I could do. And so I've just continued to play and to be curious, and to, you know, ask people to describe to me the various representations of people and gender around me. And I'm really just coming to this place of oh, you know, being much, much more comfortable in my own self.
Right. What unique challenges have you experienced due to your intersecting identities?
Yes, that's a great, great question. So, you know, I guess for me, being like I'm totally blind, so I haven't had the chance to look around me. And to, I don't like this word, but like normalize, but I don't like that word, but to integrate, that's a better word. I haven't had a chance to look around me, to integrate into my own psyche that there are various expressions of gender. Mm. I have to go out and get that information from people. And it all is very subjective as to what they decide is worth sharing. And so that can be a challenge. I find that, you know, I have to really trust people through this process to make sure that I'm wearing things that express who I am, because they might feel comfortable to me, but they may not present the image that I'm interested in presenting. I've had, you know, I get into situations when I'm using the public washrooms and things where I have to be quite vulnerable. So like the other day I needed to make use of the washroom facilities, and somebody assumed they knew which one I would be more comfortable in. Mm. And I had to say, well, isn't there a single-use washroom anywhere? because I actually don't feel very comfortable in a public washroom. And so then that started this whole series of events. And I actually think I maybe just waited until I got home because I couldn't find a situation that was comfortable for me. So there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that make it a bit of an interesting journey, you know? And I get, you know, I also can't, like the other day, I keep getting referred to on the buses that, you know, the lady with the dog, and I want to yell at the bus driver. No, it's not the lady with the dog, but I need the bus driver to be on my side, right? Because I need the bus driver to perhaps give me information as I'm getting off the bus. So there's sometimes a part of me that doesn't correct that bus driver. So there's all kinds of small things that happen every day.
And that leaves you feeling uncomfortable, unseen.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Unseen and uncomfortable. And also just, you know, I then struggle with where's the line between advocacy. And I really do identify as someone who likes to advocate and activism and that sort of thing. But then on the other end of that is, you know, I don't know who's around me. I could be surrounded by something that if I could see, I would think, might be better to keep your mouth shut because there's X, Y, and Z here. And yeah, just get out of here, you know?
So it's other people's assumptions that can often leave you feeling.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the appropriate word here, because uncomfortable, disrespected, unseen, and yet
vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah. And yet the potential need for that input and support from the sighted community, that's a very delicate balance to find.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is. Because, I mean, you know, honestly, Lois, I like people. I really enjoy being around people. And so there's sometimes a piece of me that says, okay, is this important today in this relationship? I constantly have to figure that out, not only for being transgender, but also for being blind, you know. And sometimes the reality is, you know, I'm on my way to work. So I don't necessarily have the time or the space in my brain to worry about it. And yet it's still important to me, you know? So I guess I've learned to just compartmentalize and then think, okay, well, when I get home, you know, if there's something I can do about the situation, maybe I'll do something about it. But oftentimes the interactions that I am faced with are very, very quick and short, right? You're using transit, you're walking on the street, whatever.
I hear you. Yeah. Are there any particular misconceptions about the transgender community that you wish people just better understood?
I think there's a couple. There's one which is that not everybody has permanent pronouns. Some people don't even define themselves as having pronouns. So I think to be very sure that you're just following that individual. And there's this misconception that we're all going to get angry with you if you get it wrong. And, you know, we're not. A lot of us are not. Like, okay, I can't speak for everybody. But I personally will never get angry. The only time I get a bit tight is if someone goes around and starts talking about me, say on a Zoom call. And I've had this happen a few times now where they just talk about me without me. That annoys me just as a human. But then when they don't check in about how I want to be referred to, and or they talk about my situation without me. That can be really challenging. But the other thing is, you know, the misconception is that we're all going to get angry. A lot of us are not. We want to do is say, oh, actually, you know, I don't go by she, her pronouns. I'm he, they, or I'm they, them pronouns. All you have to do is say, okay, sorry about that, and then just start your sentence again, or make sure that you're next time around you slip and you say, well, she's coming to the concert with me. And then you realize you have to do is go, no, they're coming to the concert with me, and just reframe it. Nobody's standing around here being policing people, you know. The other misconception, I think, is that it's a phase. You know,
it's a temporary.
It's not a phase. It's a temporary. Or you're hanging on people that you shouldn't be hanging around with, like all these sorts of things. You know what? It's not a phase. I can tell you for absolute sure that this is not a phase. And, you know, we're here to stay. And I think, you know, we've always been around. This is not a new thing. That's another thing, you know. This is not a new thing that's coming out. If I actually read online yesterday, there's a few languages, and I'm afraid I'm not remembering which ones they were, but there's a few languages that actually have, they're more going to a tendency of pronouns that are not quite on the, of non-binary pronouns than what they are for the binary pronouns. It's fascinating. There are cultures where there are more than two, three, or four genders.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fascinating to learn that, goodness gracious me, people who experience what I've experienced have actually been around for centuries, and I'm only just learning it now.
It is one of those things. And I think the only thing that is new is that these are conversations that we are increasingly having. Yes. And it's so important, because it is about inclusion. It's about recognizing everybody's right to identify as they wish.
Yes.
What would you say to someone who, I, you know, I've heard this from a number of different people over the time, that they struggle with the fact that the grammatical confusion between they, them as a singular pronoun and as a plural, and they really struggle to get their heads around the concept of they, them being a singular pronoun. Have you encountered that? And what is your response if someone asks you that?
I have encountered that. And I heard the most beautiful response from a teacher one day, who actually is an English teacher. And the English, because I kind of struggled with it in the beginning as well. I thought, gee, you know what? This is kind of, and the English teacher said, well, you know what? Language evolves all the time. And this is just another one of those evolutions. Some people are going to like it, some people are not. But then the other day I was reading a book, and I can't remember the context, but it was funny because somebody, I realized in how many cases when we are just writing fiction, mm-hmm. that we're using them as not necessarily in the plural. And I'm trying to think of a good example, but you just go read some books and you'll see, and they, them, and you'll see how many times it actually gets used, not necessarily in a plural kind of a context.
I've seen this.
Yeah.
Someone,
and I would say to people,
someone lost some money. I wonder what happened to them.
Exactly.
It's natural until we start thinking about it. And I think that's where some people really struggle to make that shift in understanding.
And I guess my response to that as well, which may not be the nicest response, but it's my response. It is like, I really, really don't actually have the space to pay much heed to the grammatically correct that is happening here. I say, if I ask you to refer to me in a way, the fact is that you need to respect me enough as a human being. I mean, certainly we can have a conversation about it, but we need to respect each other enough as human beings to say, well, that's fine. That's how they want to be referred to as. You know, there's people that have pronouns that are things like Z-Zem, you know, Z-E-M for them, or Z, you know, whatever. And it doesn't matter whether I think that's a word or not, or whatever my monkey mind goes around thinking about. The fact is that my dear friend has asked me, and they've been vulnerable, and they've said to me, Mitch, this is who I am. And that's a huge vulnerable step. The last thing I must do is say, listen, that's not a word, or that's not grammatically correct. Because, you know, when people start using different pronouns, it's not a slap in anybody's face. It's not a slap in the parents' face. It's not a slap in grandma's face, anything like that. All it is they're saying, gosh, I'm coming to a realization about myself, and I'm vulnerable, and I'm going to tell you, and will you love me through this?
Yeah, that's a good way of approaching it, because it is, you know, we understand that given names are important to help people identify, and pronouns are equally important as part of each person's choice of how they themselves identify.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Mitch, what advocacy do you feel is needed within the blindness community to bring about greater inclusion of non-binary persons?
I think that, sorry, I'm just going to fix my headphone here. It's there we go. Sorry. I think that for the blindness community that I have been involved in, sometimes there's a tendency to say, well, you know what? I don't really care if you're blankety blank or whatever you are, non-binary, put any label there that you want to. I'm only worried about the fact that you're blind. That's all I care about. And that's a very, okay, this pun is intended. It's kind of like tunnel vision, right? You're only looking at something through a little tunnel. You're only looking at one tiny little piece of the person. Not that there's anything wrong with, you know, the physical manifestation of a tunnel vision, because lots of people experience that. But what it is, it's like looking at somebody and maybe just looking at a little tiny section of them, or maybe even acknowledging a tiny little section of it. It could even be somebody that's maybe teaching you. Maybe they're in a position of power and they say that to you, or maybe it's a mentor that's saying that to you, and they're saying, "Oh my goodness gracious, you know, I don't care. You know, you're just blind. That's all I care about." But the reality is that if you're interacting with somebody, you're going to want to interact with the incredible, amazing person that we all are. We all are just wonderful little manifestations. And if you only look at one part, you're not looking at the whole person. So I would say in the blindness community, there just needs to be more focus on intersectionality. And also, I think people are thinking that the fact that I'm non-binary and I'm asking to be included in that way in the blindness field and in the blindness community, people see that as me trying to take the focus away from blindness. Well, that's not at all what I'm asking. A lot of us just want to be included with all of our intersectionalities, because the reality is that, you know, none of my intersectionalities in their singular form define me. It's the person that I am with whatever I am that is who I am.
Do you feel that perhaps part of the problem, difficult word to use, but the difficulty is that because of our lack of sight, that there are certain assumptions, or that we don't see necessarily the diversity that is visually represented by people out in the community?
That could be a part of it. I haven't really thought about that. That's a good point. I think that is definitely a part of it. And so I guess where I land with that is that it's even more important for us to start, you know, saying our pronouns. Like I recently was at a blindness organization, which shall remain anonymous, but they were very supportive toward me, and they had me included in these meetings. And I said, well, we need to be acknowledging people's pronouns, because when you don't have that representation visually, it's even more important to then speak it out loud. Because otherwise, you know, I always think to myself, if I speak this out loud, if I tell people my journey, if I'm really open, there could be a young person who's blind, who hasn't maybe got access to this information, because, I mean, you know, we can't see the rainbow flags and signs and whatever. And maybe the fact that I'm out there might just support that person to go, oh, well, that's cool. There's a blind person. I wonder what their journey has been like.
Yeah. And perhaps as you experienced listening to a speaker speaking about their journey that caused such a shift in your thinking and your awareness, that you could be that same experience for someone else.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So then, shifting the question round, what advocacy do you think is needed in the LGBTQIA plus community to bring about greater awareness and greater accommodation of blind and other disabled individuals?
Yeah, and I mean, it's a really good question, because the community is diverse as any other community. So I think, you know, I think that just making sure that you're open to when somebody comes in and says, you know, could we do this a little bit differently? Or I was at a meeting online the other night, and I misheard who was next because it was on Zoom, and somebody just sort of jumped on me, and I just felt so bad. And I said, you know, actually, because I hadn't gotten to introduce myself, I said, I'm blind. And the fact is that you're talking and you're going on Zoom, and you're all also putting things in the chat. And I really am completely overwhelmed. I actually left the meeting. I'm actually completely overwhelmed because yeah. I'm listening to all this stuff. And so then I misheard what I was supposed to do, right? And I think just having a bit more of a realization that not everybody is going to be wanting to communicate on, you know, a lot of stuff is done online. And for me, it's just like, well, you know, people assume that I'm going to want to do that because, you know, I'm blind. And it's kind of like, oh, I find it exceptionally overwhelming. So, but I mean, all in all, a lot of times when you're dealing with the 2S LGBTQAI plus community, a lot of people have had a lot of experience with their own intersectionalities, you know, living out the marginalizations that come from those intersectionalities. So I have found in my very limited experience that when I point something out, people often will try and make some kind of accommodation. Now, I have very limited experience because, as I say, everything has been online and I've been a bit more, I found that to be a little more challenging.
Thank you. I understand, and I can see the perspective of saying that people from a very marginalized community are often more open to the awareness. And I think that the term that you used earlier about tunnel vision is a really interesting one to to consider in its broader sense of the hyper-focus of one part of our identity rather than the totality.
Exactly. And I'm sort of struggling with my word choice because I'm realizing that it's not, it might be a little bit of an ableist term that I've used. So I do apologize to the people taking in this podcast or YouTube. But I guess I just, I don't know how else to put it. But I will definitely think about that and then do better next time.
It's very true because tunnel vision in its own right is a condition, a way of seeing and experiencing the world. And it's we're not disregarding or dismissing it as being in any way negative or derogatory.
It's a very legitimate way of seeing the world, to be honest.
Very definitely.
I had a friend actually who had this condition, and gosh, it was amazing what she, with the little vision that she had and then the way that it manifested as tunnel vision, gee, the things that she could see, I was sometimes like, wow. It's kind of cool. She really used it well.
There we are. A word that's come up a couple of times in our conversation is that of ally, allyship, being an ally. Tell us, what is an ally and why is it important?
An ally is somebody who doesn't necessarily identify with, like, they're not a so, for example, an ally to me is the person isn't transgender, but they are in the world in such a way that I can feel that they totally support who I am and the way that I am in the world. And they're willing to learn, they're willing to grow. They kind of, they might join one of the groups, you know, like here we've got PFLAG and different groups in Canada, where people can come as allies and work alongside the community. And so I'm very fortunate to have allies in my life. I see you as an ally. I see, you know, my some of my friends here as allies, and my chosen family and those people. And it's very important to have allies. There will be times when I'm going to say, listen, I'm going to go to this particular meeting, but it's not for allies, because it's sometimes you just need to be exclusively with other transgender people, other blind people, whatever, right? And you might just say, look, I'm sorry, I don't want to I don't want to go to an ally meeting. I've actually recently did that. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I did that was because I am not in a space where I'm able to support all of these really upset allies or upset, you know, people that are so upset that their family member is transgender. It's not something I'm able to do, but that's fine. That's my stuff. And I get to name what I'm comfortable doing. There's other people in the community who flock to those ally groups and will happily support those people and be a resource for them. I'm just not there yet. And so as an ally, I think it's very important that people understand that there will be times when somebody might say to you, listen, no, I'm sorry, but I have to do this on my own, or I have to do this without you. But it's not because I don't love you. It's just because I need to be with people that are completely on this journey also.
I have the thought in mind of the number of people who insist on offering us help because of our blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some times that it's appropriate, and there are many times that it's not.
Yes.
And
when I say no, it's not because I hate you. It's just because I don't see it.
Yes. Or because another time. Yeah. So that's maybe a different analogy to consider that. So,
yeah,
are there any particular support systems or resources that you have found have been helpful for you in your journey?
Well, it's some of them are unique to Canada, but we have an organization here called TransCare BC. Which TransCare British Columbia, and they help you navigate the medical system if you're wanting to access any kinds of maybe surgeries or hormones or counseling. They offer peer supports, groups, things like that. So they've been a good source. I think I haven't joined any of the groups on social media. I'm very, very, very nervous about social media at the moment, so I'm not doing that for myself, but I know there are groups out there. I couldn't tell you what the safe ones are. There's, the limits, the resources I've accessed have been a bit limited, to be honest with you. I've mostly connected in with individuals. I know that in the US, the National Federation of the Blind has a division that is for, you know, 2S LGBTQAI plus community members. So I know that's probably a good resource. I am on their Facebook group and stuff. There's, you know, I think for me, it's been mostly trying to find people that have interests that are similar to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then if, you know, happen to be transgender. So like I'm a musician. So at the moment I'm sort of in this zone where I'm just looking for other musicians. And that's how I'm kind of approaching it, because I don't always feel comfortable joining a group because of who I am and intersectionality. It's more like, I said to someone the other day, it's got to be like I'm a drummer. So, you know, if there's a drumming group for people that were part of this community, I would go. It's got to be based on it for me, on an interest.
Okay. But you would feel that finding a community, finding the resources, that there probably will be some that are available, but to exercise a degree of caution about
feeling safe,
feeling comfortable, feeling that your identity, your vulnerability can be held securely.
Yes, I would definitely say that. And then I would say, you know, follow your gut. Sometimes we get a feeling about something, and that's the universe, or however you think of it, trying to tell you this might not be a good fit for you.
Yeah.
And that is okay if you decide that you, like where I kind of started as well was when I saw the doctor, I said to her, well, what resources are in my community? You know, that's kind of another way you can go about it. But if you're getting feelings that you don't want to be there, you don't have to be there just because, you know, you're transgender. You can find other resources. I personally would really like to start an in-person group that meets here where I live. And I just want to, you know, for me, I just want to go do little things in the community, or have a picnic, or kind of those are the types of things. But everyone's going to have their own need. Some people need to sit and talk about it. That's a good thing to do. There's, you know, perhaps I know there's some counseling resources through something here called Qmunity. I don't know anything about them, but they are specifically for our community. And so, yeah, and just, you know, reach out. There's always, even if you can't find a counselor, even if you can follow some people online or, you know, safe people to follow online, there's always that possibility.
And there's always the ability to disconnect if you don't feel safe.
Yes, exactly. And it's okay to disconnect.
Yeah, but sometimes we forget that. We feel we are connected. We have to stay connected. And that's not necessarily the best decision always.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if somebody's, a lot of times, you know, we feel, oh, well, this person really needs us, so we should stay connected. Well, you don't have to. It's okay to say, actually, and maybe there's another resource or another person that would be more appropriate for that person. By you letting go of that connection, maybe it'll come to that person.
Yeah. Mitch, thank you for sharing those.
No problem. I'm really sorry. My printer's making a noise. I have no idea why.
I can't hear it from this side, so that's quite okay. It feels the need to be expressed.
It randomly starts making noises. It's like, what are you doing?
Printers, such joyous things. It's just taking part in the conversation.
Exactly.
If people would like to reach out to you, are they able to do so?
Yeah, I am on Facebook under Mitch Creedy. I will soon be changing my profile to Mitch Kidd, as in K-I-D-D. I just keep forgetting to do that. That's probably the best way. I'm being a little bit selective about friend requests at the moment. So if you do want to get in contact, maybe if you send me a friend request, send me a message, because I am kind of vetting my friend requests a little bit, because I'm kind of out there and I want to stay safe. Yeah, at some point here very soon, I'm also going to be putting up a LinkedIn profile. So that's another way that you'll eventually, but for now, that's probably the easiest way is Facebook.
Great. Thank you, Mitch. And we'll put the link to that profile into the show notes.
Yes.
So as a final question, how can allies best support people from the blind and LGBTQIA? You're using a slightly different term that is new to me. 2S, LGBTQIA plus?
So 2S recognizes Two-Spirit, and that is it's an Indigenous term, because I don't know a lot about it, but from my limited understanding, in the Indigenous community, there's always been an acknowledgement that in the culture that there are people that sort of embody both genders, or, you know, however many genders. So here, as part of decolonizing, and I'm quite passionate about that, is that I always put the 2S first, just recognizing that the Indigenous people are the first peoples here.
Thank you for explaining that. Okay, but for people who are an ally for the non-binary community, how can allies best support your community?
I think the best way is to just support us where we're at. You know, it's okay to ask questions, but
excuse me,
if someone isn't feeling like they are able to answer the question, perhaps that's okay. You just let it go for now, because as much as you're trying to come to terms with this revelation, we are as well. You know, I may have had more time to think about it before I tell you, but I have struggled with it, right? Honoring whatever somebody asks you to call them. They might say one name one day and another name the next day, and please, like, just change the contacts in your phones, because I'm getting so many text messages by my dead name. And I was actually really patient for like 2 years. Now I've started saying to people, so what strategy are you going to put in place so that you can actually, you know, kind of honor my new name? It might be sticking a photo up on your mirror with my name underneath. I don't care what it is. Just please do it. I think another thing that people can do is to simply understand that, you know, it's the fact that we haven't shared the journey with you yet is, again, it's not because we got something personal against you, but we've been trying to figure out the stuff. I've been trying to figure it out. And, you know, I think the biggest encouragement that I would say is, you know, you're going to have some feelings about the journey. If I'm sharing my journey with you, I'm already vulnerable. I am not the place for you to sort of implode and download and trauma dump. I'm not the place. In fact, I had somebody do that to me the other day. And I literally, at first, I was all ready to support them. And then I actually said, you know what? We're done. Because the place that you need to go is perhaps a trusted friend, a therapist. Go to a group, a support group. There are lots of groups for allies. But I am not the place for you to trauma dump and tell me all about how you are just devastated that your kid is who they are. You know what? You might be devastated now, but understand that when your family member becomes more authentically themselves, you're going to have you could have potentially a better relationship. And you potentially are going to see that person just shine. And I mean, I keep saying to people, why are you so attached to my outcomes? Why are you so attached to an outcome about who I need to be? Maybe that's a good question to explore with a trusted friend or therapist too.
Thank you, Mitch. Very wise words and some good strategies there. Mitch, as I said at the top of this interview, I'm really grateful to you for being willing to come onto a different way of seeing and to talk so openly and honestly about your journey, your identities, and your experience of living as a person who is both blind and transgender. I just want to respect and thank you for being willing to share that with my community.
You're so welcome, Lewis. And you know what? I really am honored that you would actually provide the space to have such a conversation. It's not a lot of people that will. And so I want to honor you for providing the space and for being open and just for being a jolly good friend.
It's been such a pleasure to chat to you today.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We'd love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yasi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.